From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 752, The Impact of the Pandemic on IT with guest Stephen Rose. Recorded Tuesday, November 17th, 2020. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts, LLC. For more information, visit soundthoughtsllc.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. My guest today is Stephen Rose, who is, well, you've been at Microsoft for a long time now. Since, what, 2009? So, 11 years?
Yeah.
And I think last time we talked, it was OneDrive for Business. What are you focused on these days?
I was with Microsoft 365 team, and then they loved the work that I did there and moved me over to Teams. So I'm now leading all the IT Pro stuff for Teams. So content, information, I'm working with the MVPs again, which is great. I'm doing a biweekly webcast on Teams that we're doing, and just trying to get docs.com and all the good stuff to help IT pros continue to make it through this pandemic and manage and secure their users and devices and all that good stuff with Teams.
Yeah, it's been in the pandemic, of course, it's been a lot. Hey, I can't really get into this. You and I both have a dear friend that we lost.
Yeah.
But I just interviewed Chris too.
Yeah, me too. I had him on my show last month. We talked about edge security and if you were going to do Teams and by saving, you know, you could use the browser to save any website as an app and doing it to have multiple instances of Teams running. And we talked about edge security. And Chris and I have been friends for my whole time at Microsoft. And we've broken bread many times. I've been to his house, mine, and he passed away very suddenly. And it was just a blow to myself and to the community because he was such an amazing guy. One of the things that I said about Chris is if you ran up to Chris at a conference and you asked him a question, you would get his undivided, complete, focused attention mm-hmm. on whatever you asked. And he made anything you were going to ask important, it made you feel important, which is such an amazing trait for anybody to have.
Yeah, the passion leaked out of him all of the time.
Yeah.
His enthusiasm for what he was doing and the things he was working on. And you know, that last show I grabbed with him was the exploit protection because he'd written this paper. Mm-hmm. And I, of course, read it. And as soon as I read it, I'm like, well, that needs to be a show. And he knew right away, right? I ping him, was like, yeah. Dude, he's like, yeah, that would make a fine show.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and as an interviewer, he's just one of those personalities where it's just not, he's like, all right, exploit protection, go. you're going to get an half hour.
Once you put the quarter in, you got to let the record play with Chris.
It's going to go for sure. A terrible loss. And just one of those, I mean, I would have to say it, like this sort of hand of God kind of, it was an accident. And here we are, just out of the blue.
It was a bicycling accident. He suffered an aneurysm, which threw him from the bike and caused, unfortunately, irreparable damage. I've been, you know, really close with the family and friends. And we started a scholarship because Chris was a psychology major. That was his original degree. But then he went into computer science and he was living on people's couches hand to mouth while he was going to college. So he'd take a semester or two, he'd drop out, he'd have to raise money and then go back. But he got it done. It took him like 6 years to get that degree. So in lieu of flowers, his wife, while we were trying to put all this together, said, I think it'd be great to start a scholarship. So we're doing that. We'll have it on bold.org. I think by the time the show goes live, I'll give you a link when I get a chance. But sure. We raised over $30,000 in a week for it. And we've had some people offer to match. So I feel by this time next year, when we hit that, sadly, that 1 year anniversary, I'm hoping we have $100,000 and we can give $2,500 a semester to somebody who make it a little bit easier for them to get a computer science degree. So I think that is a great way for Chris's way of helping people and being there for people continues to move on.
He always empowered people. And now we're going to have a fund to help empower new folks to get into our industry, to be part of what we make here.
Yes. He was truly the chief awesomeologist on many levels.
He really was. He had some of the best business cards, some of which were on guitar picks.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, thank you for that. And we certainly will make sure the links are in the show notes and people can contribute to it. And we miss you, Chris. I can't believe we're not going to see each other again.
Yeah, I was saying the next time we're all together, which leads into our show the, you know, things aren't going to be the same. It'll be toughest when next time we all go to a conference and Chris isn't there. I think that will be it. But yeah, fortunately, we're not going to be doing that for a while. So
not for a while yet. I'm looking at the situation now during the pandemic and saying, like, how much of this stuff is permanent? Like, I don't know what a conference is even going to look like going forward. But
yeah,
work is suddenly shifted. And you've been in this at the as the Office 365 person. Mm-hmm. I got to think, like, everybody who knows you must have called you because everybody made moves all at the same time. Like, you just, the priority list got shuffled.
People did in weeks what they had planned to do in months or years.
Right.
There we were in mid-February, and it was like, yeah, you know, and just before this started, and I was doing a series of show with Paul Thurrott, which was great. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about, yeah, this is going to be the next 18 months when people roll out Teams, and here's all the great resources, and here's to make sure they're not just using it for chat. And then a month later, we're like, people have got 2 to 3 weeks to roll out Teams.
Yeah.
Completely the board. To their org, and that's it. And I think what's interesting out of this is they did it, but then they took a look a few months later and went, oh, I need to really go back and take a look at security. I need to take a look at how I have Azure B2B set up. I need to set up MFA.
Right.
All these things that they hadn't done because they were trying to get it out so quickly. But what's great for end users is so many of them said, hi, I want to be able to work from my backyard on my iPad and mm-hmm. do Teams from that. So I need you to make that work. I'm not going to be in an office. I'm not going to be on a corporate owned machine. This is how I'm going to be working. So right. figure it out. And IT just, they had to say yes. They couldn't say no, or I don't think so, or you have to do this. It just wasn't an option.
Well, everybody, you know, not everybody has an office in their house, much less because everybody was home, like three offices in their house, which is really what I was talking to folks. That's what they're up against. It's like, hey, yeah. the house PC is in the hall
yeah.
and the kids are using it for schoolwork. Like, I've got a company laptop, which means I'm on the dining room table or, yeah. you know, somewhere else. We had a great conversation with us. Like, I have two roommates and no office and
sure.
you know, I need space. And these were now IT problems. Like, you confronted, yeah. it wasn't just the casual, I really want to work from home one day a week kind of thing. It's like, well, now everybody's home
yeah.
and no sign of when they're coming back.
Yeah.
And now it feels like they're on the other side of this, which is like, and why am I going into the office? Like, the priority for
right.
face-to-face work is very changed now.
Yeah, I think, you know, we saw a survey that said that 70% of people want to continue to work at home at least part of the week.
Mm-hmm.
I think we realize, though, no matter how much we have these great tools, nothing replaces that water cooler conversation or the, oh, hey, while I see you, I have a quick question and things to get things done. So I think there are aspects of in-person that we definitely miss out on, but mm-hmm. I don't think we will get back to that point perhaps ever. I don't think yeah. a job can turn around to somebody and say, we're in New York, you're in LA. I'm sorry, we can't hire you because we don't do well with remote workers. That we've proven people not only can work well, but what we've seen is because there's no off hours.
Right.
Because people are not commuting and getting that commute time or lunchtime, that people are doing 5 days worth of work in many cases in 4 days.
Sure.
Our boss, Takeshi, who's head of all the cloud org, who's now our, you know, boss's boss basically said Friday afternoons are no meeting Fridays. That Friday at noon, no one can schedule meetings. That's your time to mm-hmm. get caught up on this other stuff or take the afternoon off. And it's great because people are also saying, look, if you want to go take a walk and do a call while you're walking, awesome. If you need to go do something with your family and you can't make a meeting, don't apologize for it. Do it. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
You'll get caught up and people will understand. So it's also changing the psychological aspects of what is work and when is work and how is work and saying no, which was difficult to say in person. But now it's a little bit easier to say, I'm sorry, I can't do that, or I can only do part of that. And this is how this has to work, because people are also being teachers and babysitters and having to feed kids and do the stuff that even when they were working at home was not part of that daily routine.
No, I think the old style of work from home was very much a, you have to leave mommy alone right now, she's doing the work, and that was just not right. optional during the pandemic. I'm also very, very cognizant of this idea that we were forced to share our homes with our coworkers.
Yeah.
With all of these calls and yeah. for better or worse. I mean, I mean, we found warmth in it, right? Having fun with what you wore, bringing pets into the loop, kids are invariably going to be involved one way or the other. I think about that great old CNN story where the little girl walked in while I was doing the thing. And then the pandemic changed the tone on that. And then they have a show with him, with his family. They do a piece. Like
we did a whole ad for Mother's Day of mothers that are doing things while on calls and doing that, going, look, this is the new norm.
Yeah.
And that's the way it is. I mean, I'm so happy that I upgraded all my internet and all that stuff back before all this happened, because my daughter's downstairs. She's applying to colleges, getting ready to go to college and being in high school. My wife is working. She works either downstairs at the kitchen table or set up an office. I redid my office and got a whole in-room system.
Right.
Because we had to. That's just what we had to do. And it's crazy. And we see each other less now because I'm not having breakfast in the morning and coming home at 4:30. I'm like, oh, I got to go jump on a call at 6 o'clock at night, or go do Jeremy Moskowitz's conference tomorrow at noon, which never would have happened in the middle of a day. So, it's just crazy.
It's a very different dynamic. But it's interesting for me hearing you as a Teams guy saying, hey, there's some things we need to do in person, because Teams seems to be that linchpin product of here is your collaboration tool. Like, what is the digital water cooler? I'm not saying we're there. I'm saying, can we get there?
I think what's interesting is we have four generations of workers right now, from boomers all the way up. And what's interesting is it's almost split down the middle. It's like 48% are, Gen X and millennial and boomers and millennials. And then the other half are Gen X, Gen Z. And it's almost split down the middle. And what's interesting is you have this group of people where email is the number one way that they communicate.
Sure.
On a PC using Outlook downloaded to the desktop. And then you have this other extreme of people who do everything through a browser and don't see a difference between a cell phone and a laptop, because it's just a way to get to your stuff, that are working that way. And it was interesting because when I was on OneDrive team, I would start to work with engineering and I'd send them an email and I'd say, hey, I have a question on this. And I'd get an answer 4 days later.
Right.
And then I'd have a follow up. So it would take like a week to get something done. And I finally sat down with them and said, look, how do I communicate with you on this? And this is before we had Teams. They're like, oh, yeah, we're using Slack for this. And we just chat and we do that. And then when we got to Teams, it made it easier, where I'd ask a question. They go, I don't know. They'd loop somebody into the conversation to be done. And they made the greatest comment ever. They said, email's how you tell people there's donuts in the break room. It's not how you get work done.
Right.
We don't work there anymore. And they want to answer the question, get done, and move on to whatever's next. And I think that's what we're all catching up on, which is we have to feel more comfortable on just doing, hey, how you doing? Doing a quick call with people, scheduling that time and starting to do that. And that's going to be easier for some people than it is for others.
Sure.
But it's going to take a long time to get to that point. And some people are not going to be able to do that. So it's going to be hybrid, I think, for a long time. I don't think we're going to see offices the way they are, even designed the way that they were with these big open spaces anymore.
Well, and the problem is, I think we're still betting on the pandemic will be over before we really think about things like commercial leases or even the redesign of HVAC. I've built enough workspaces and data centers and things that I am enamored of the idea of, can I make an HVAC system in a building that would actually mean decrease the risk of aerosols and so forth. Like, that's not beyond comprehension. The technology exists. It's just a question of, that's a 5-year window.
Right.
And here we are still in year one of this. And apparently here we are at the end of the year. There's going to be more, but it's not going to be that much more.
Who knows? Who knows when we'll get back to some resemblance of normalcy? Yeah. But I got to say, IT in general has done an amazing job of stepping up and doing that and asking the questions and then going back late summer to go, okay, we're going to secure this, we're going to do it, we're going to fully embrace this, we're going to train people properly.
Yeah.
But IT has become more subservient to the end user, instead of being the keepers of no, to say, all right, let's figure out how we're going to allow people to do this.
Yeah, and very enabling.
MFA and things like that have gone through the roof. It's been great to see finally.
Yeah. It's funny because those are complications for the average user, things like multi-factor. And yet they solve a bunch of problems too. It's like, hey, I want you to be able to fix your account yourself. It means you have to go through these things.
Yeah. Self-service keys for BitLocker and teaching folks how to do that and how to register a device and it's great. Now you just take a picture of a capture code and it says great. And it's interesting now because there was a bunch of articles that are saying, look, let's get rid of phone auth and go right to biometric auth, whether it's a fingerprint or you buy a fingerprint reader to put in, or mm-hmm. we're using Face or Hello. But, you know, since every cell phone now supports a fingerprint reader or facial recognition, there's no reason to do phone auth anymore and to move to that level. Yeah, and it's great to see finally
skip people SMS, finally pushing for it. Right. Like Microsoft Authenticator asked for my fingerprint just fine.
Yeah, or my face, either one. Yeah, it does great. So just do that. And, you know, and now we're seeing it even commercially. My bank is now supporting it. Many apps are. It's great. And I love it when somebody goes, yeah, you know, somebody tried to log into your Steam account and they can't do it because you don't have the phone auth or things like that. So even in the simplest area, we're starting to see that become more the norm, which makes it easier for business, I think, to do that as well. When you see that in your personal life.
And it just becomes some habits, too. Like you just get, you know, it took me a year to really get comfortable with YubiKeys. And now I can't imagine functioning without them. But it's, and I'm not saying we should put YubiKeys in the hands of users, but I can't see any excuse for any IT person, the account, and these accounts that get attacked. And I would even see senior leadership now, you know, when you talk about where the security exploits are, it's like, the extra step now are these keys. Like you, we're past Authenticator. You can go that extra level and make it even tougher. And Stephen, I'm going to interrupt for one moment for this very important message. This episode of Run As Radio is brought to you by the Humanitarian Toolbox. Humanitarian Toolbox builds open source software for disaster relief organizations. One of the leading projects, called 2 Weeks Ready, helps individuals, families, and communities prepare for disasters using smartphones. HTBox builds and operates this and other applications on behalf of a variety of disaster response organizations, and they need your help. Go to htbox.org for more information or to make a tax-deductible donation. HTBox is a 501c3 U.S. registered charity. Your donations help support the creation of this life-saving software. Thanks. And we're back. It's Run As Radio. I'm Richard Campbell. That's my friend Stephen Rose. I'm talking a bit about, I don't know what we're really talking about, these, how IT has changed in this period, too. Yeah. Like, I appreciate your sentiment of we're very much enabling the user. I've also hearing over and over again that IT is at the table in the senior leadership meetings now more than ever. Like that they're, the shape of decisions being made by the company, because we're way more technological dependent, means your director of IT, like somebody who has direct technical responsibility, needs to be at that table.
Yeah, I mean, we saw a huge shift over the past few years of sales and marketing starting to lead what software was going to be bought for the company and used, because they were the ones saying, hey, I need this to work well. And instead of IT saying, here's what we're going to use, sales or marketing, and that was the problem. They'd bring in Box and Dropbox and OneDrive. They would bring in Slack and all these other things to help themselves work better. And IT finally went, crap, we've just got to figure out which one we want to use and standardize on that and move forward.
Organizing now governance for it, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And now it is, I want to work from an Android tablet, from a Starbucks with a headset, and I want to use Outlook on 6 different devices, and I'm going to be switching between them. So you need to figure out how to make that work and how to be secure.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And management saying, do it.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear why we shouldn't do it.
Find a way.
This is how we're going to do it. Yeah.
Well, it helps with the tooling's better too, that we actually have more security products and we have more resources for these things, and we have more bandwidth. I mean, honestly, goodness, I'm stunned that the cloud and the internet survived March, April, and May. Like, to me, those seem to be, I wonder at some point, and I've got that historian bend to me, when we write this story, we're going to talk about how close it came, because it feels like it got close. You know, when the EU asked Netflix to turn off the 4K service, and, you know, we suddenly were made very aware that how dependent we are on all this infrastructure, and it made it through somehow.
Absolutely. But even more so, it was like, hey, if you want meetings to be inclusive and engaging, you've got to turn on your camera.
Yeah.
And this starts with senior leadership. So if you guys are not turning on your camera, no one else will. Sure. So we went from these faceless chats with PowerPoints to you've got to be on screen. You've got to at least be wearing some sort of proper shirt, even if you're wearing shorts and things like that, where that started to change. So we saw bandwidth usage go through the roof because it was that you couldn't go out to a movie, couldn't go to dinner. So you're ordering food online. You're watching your evening's entertainment online. Mm-hmm. All of that is happening. You're doing Thanksgiving and birthdays online with family and friends. So it it's 24/7 and school is happening that way. And then they were already FaceTiming and doing that stuff afterwards to help each other with homework. So the rest of us got in that boat. So it's absolutely amazing. And I got so many pings from people going, hey, I got to do something with my internet at home. Where do I start? And you're like, okay, let's walk you through this and let's do it. But even like webcams, it was hard to buy a webcam for the first 3-4 months.
For months. Man, months and months.
Yeah.
I'm also finding people screen burnout.
Yeah.
You know, they hitting the limit. Like, hey, I have been managing my team all day, which means one team's call after another. The one thing I don't want to do in the evening is do Zoom cocktails. Like, I can't, right. I can't face another screen. I actually had a friend of mine ping me the other day and say, hey, I really want to talk to you about this. Can we do it without screens? I want to go for a walk and I'll just be on my headset on my cell phone. I'm like, that's a great idea. I'll get the dog and we'll head out and we'll both, when we're going to do this call, we're just going to do it on a walk separately.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and that's been encouraged. We find people on meetings who are like, look, I'm not going to Toronto because I'm out walking. They're like, okay, great.
Yeah.
My boss is at her cabin up in the woods up near Snoqualmie where the ski resort is because she's like, I get better internet up there than I do at my house. And I like hiking and going out and skiing. So she goes up there and she'll be up there for 3 to 6 weeks. Then she comes back for a few days, stocks up more supplies, and then they go back up.
Wow.
So yeah, it's awesome to see that sort of stuff. But it's great. I loved working on my back deck all summer, just sitting out there underneath the umbrella and just working out there. And it was so great. Everybody mocked me for buying a convertible in Seattle.
Yeah.
But I bought one last December and it was awesome because after a really rough day, I'd put down the top, I'd go for a drive, and it was rejuvenating. It was phenomenal on how much of a difference that
finding
made
these different ways to recharge your batteries because we don't have the usual mechanisms.
Yeah. What are things that, let me ask this question to you. What are things that people should look at that maybe are not part of their habits that they should be doing to recharge in this? Because you're right. They're staring at the screens. They're doing it. And we're finding depression going up and a lot of things along that line. What is your advice for someone who's been looking at this stuff for years and years and years in IT? How do you separate that?
Yeah, I think the recognition of this getting away from time management into energy management and acknowledging that, like, we all have the same amount of time. But how well you use that time is more important. So, you know, what are the mechanisms for charging a battery? We're up in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
Like, we know perfectly well in wintertime, especially, like, if you don't go outside at lunchtime, you're not seeing the sun. And of course, we're in the great gray. So, you know, you're not going to see it anyway. But picking those, you pick moments to recharge your batteries and you put them on your schedule.
Agree.
The other question I've been asking over and over again is like, how much of what's on your Outlook, you know, in your, or whatever calendar you're using is things others want from you versus things you want, you know, besides taking out the garbage.
Right.
I've been gotten in a habit now of blocking out the 15 minutes after every meeting. So when people want to book meetings with me, you can't do back-to-backs on me now.
Right.
Right. In fact, I'm hoping I can write a script that the moment someone uses one of the tools, like a Calendly or so forth, to block out a time, it just automatically blocks 15 minutes after that.
That's great.
Yeah. And it, because...
Yeah. Our boss has said 60 minutes now are 40 and 30 are now 20.
Right.
Get people just bio breaks, because I was finding I just did 4 hours worth of meetings and meetings are getting shorter and more jam packed and realized in 4 hours, I just done 8 meetings and hadn't even a chance to go to the restroom, which is ridiculous.
I'm also, insisting on agendas now for calls.
Good.
Well, also finding out, like, there's a non-trivial chunk of these things that once you know what the agenda is, it's like, hey, if we agree to this and this, do we still need this meeting?
Yeah.
And it's like, no, if that's where we are, it's like, then let's move on, right?
Right.
So I think we're getting more careful about the price of attention. That's the exhausting part.
I think as we look at tools like workplace analytics and things along that line, that looking at that, not only from a productivity standpoint, but from a health and mental health standpoint, are really important. And I think as big bets, that's an area where we are putting big bets on, you know, how do I look at my employees? How do I look at how much they're communicating and what's happening after hours and what's causing that and effects and mental health and all of that? That's super important data that I think management now realizes is not just something we'd like to have, but we have to have.
Yeah.
In this day and age. So a lot of those tools that we've been building for the past few years have come to a point now where people are like, oh my God, I have to have the My Analytics email is great, but I need to really understand what's behind this and how people are working and how many hours a day. And that's where our boss said, you guys are doing 5 days worth of work in 4 days. So here's how we're going to solve some of that.
We're going to give some of that, take some of that pressure off. The the pandemic has made it acceptable to talk about mental health even more than we were. We were already on this story arc. Like, clearly it was becoming more and more acceptable to treat mental health the same as every other kind of health. But the pandemic just leveled the playing field, because now we all have it. We all have various kinds of stress and all have these certain problems. And so, I think that metric of when and how you recharge your batteries, how do you battle back the darkness that invades your head sometimes?
Yeah.
And that we need room for those things. At least being able to have that on the table. It's not a weakness. Agreed. But it's just a part of maintaining
teaching
health.
People how to say no.
Yeah. To set lines.
No, I can't. And it's great to see our management and say, you can say no. We also say that not everything has to be A work. There are some times when we are great with B work or even C work, depending on what's being asked from you and how.
Mm-hmm.
And defining what that is. But no, I can't do that. I'm sorry. I don't have enough time in this day, or I can't do that. But we're encouraged to say no.
Yeah.
And that's something that was just unthinkable a year ago.
Sure. Well, and one of the topics that we came up in this pandemic series also was this, how are you measuring work? And someone who's still trapped in that cycle of you're in the office every day on time, arriving early, staying late, and then you have to reinvent that online, which means you're always available for a meeting, always sending emails off hours, like those kinds of things. And in the end, it's not a good metric, right? The real metric was the output, was getting things done.
Fine.
Being involved with disaster response with Humanitarian Toolbox is like, it's not outputs, it's outcomes. Right. So it's not even enough that you put out the document, but it's, were we able to respond to that? Did this enable us to have some success somewhere? That those are the real metrics. And the amount of time you spend on that is completely secondary to the point.
Mm-hmm.
You get the necessary outcomes with less time. Fantastic.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Absolutely. Time management and how you look at it and how you budget your time. And I've always been a person who's blocked out lunch each day to make sure that I can maybe perhaps have lunch that day and things like that. But I agree. I think it's now acceptable to put yourself first before the company and figure out how you can balance that rather than company first, everything else second. And that's so strange for people, ones who have
done
it,
and for the companies
who haven't. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. I think that's just admitting the truth. The company could never be first. Because then everyone dies, right? Like,
well, it's a European way of thinking, but that's not how us here in the America do that. So that's the big difference.
Yeah, but I just think it was a mythology, really. It's just admitting that if we don't take care of the people, we have no company.
That's absolutely correct.
You know, we
don't. And what does it take to retain them? And, you know, that goes back to my original conversation of, hey, this is how we want to work and the devices and how we want to do it, which is what it takes to retain great talent rather than the boomers and the millennials going, I'm going to sit at my laptop and I'm going to be in the office 8 hours a day. And this is how I'm going to work. And like that's not going to be that way ever again.
No, seems to be a one way trip for us.
Yeah. And that's exactly it. So I think some great things are going to come out of this.
Mm-hmm.
I think being able to hug somebody is going to mean so much more to people, getting together for family gatherings. I cannot wait to travel again. And I was getting a little, I'm traveling here. I'm going to Mumbai. Now I'm just cannot wait to go travel and really appreciating every moment of it and meeting those people face to face. So I think it's going to give us a level of respect and appreciation for things that had not had that level, I think, when we get back to it. And I think that's going to be a really great thing because it's going to help us to build deeper bonds with other people and better relationships, which will, I think, we're going to make the time to be a part of. And we haven't to the level that we should in the past.
Yeah, we take a lot of things we used to take for granted. I'm still looking at 2021 and trying to figure out what our industry looks like going forward. I mean, obviously, more cloud. Is all more of the what we've had to do quickly here. I feel like we've gone through the cycle of the emergency, cleaning up the mess, and optimizing.
Yeah.
But
I think it's now moving everything over to these single platforms. I think Teams as a platform now makes sense. I think with, Oakdale, Project Oakdale and all that stuff we were doing about being able to build and run apps inside of Teams. We have over 700 different applications that you can now run within it. So looking at that as a platform, moving those apps to Azure, doing that, finally getting to that, cloud. I think people have gone, all right, I believe it and I know it's secure and it's more secure than my servers. I think this has been that jump to get us there to really allow that flexibility that people need. So it's going to be interesting to see how people leverage those platforms, the power platform, things along that line, and what they're going to build out of it. And citizen developers, I think that there's an amazing opportunity for citizen developers to innovate in ways that companies have not thought, because we're putting power in the hands of the people who actually use the stuff every day, yeah, rather than in the people that have an idea on how it should be used every day. And that's very different.
Well, we had that generation of developer in the 90s, right? Mm-hmm. You know, when you think about when Windows sort of took a hold and tools like Access and Visual Basic and Power Builder emerged, where it wasn't low-level programming, you didn't need a CS degree, and the biggest asset you brought to the table was your domain expertise.
Yeah.
You know, and we emerged a new generation of developers that were domain experts first and became software developers, and then in some ways almost destroyed their careers. Like, you know, you stop working in domain because that skill you had in using these tools became more important, and now you're going to do more of that.
Right.
But I don't know that we've had a wave quite like that since the internet. Mm-mm. You know, maybe mobile to some degree, but the wave of new generation developers, and I'm a huge fan of the citizen developer. I like the domain expert approach. Like, what do they bring to the table? They know a lot about a problem space.
Right.
And there's this new generation of tools, dependent on cloud, agnostic across the client, mm-hmm, that enable them to automate and to create efficiencies and so forth. Which, I mean, looking at that as an IT guy, it's like, hang on, because we're going to have a governance problem again.
Right.
You know, the same way, you know, we knew SharePoint was great, not because we loved it, but because the users loved it enough that they would set it up. Right. And you'd hunt down rogue SharePoint installations in your organization, running under desks everywhere. And it's, you know, at some point it's like,
on the 486 with the turbo button. Yeah. Going, yeah, exactly.
It's like, I think this SharePoint might be a thing. And suddenly, and it's this question of governance, right? I suspect if we give room for these domain experts to grab onto tools like the Power Platform and others, we're going to end up with a governance crisis again. But that's a good thing. We are finding ways to be more productive in our work and to help the company succeed enough that we're going to have to build some rules. Like, first came the car, then the traffic light.
Right.
So,
exactly.
You know, I see this new car emerging in a big way. Yeah. But in my role as in senior IT, it's like, all right, we should start thinking about what the traffic lights look like, because it's going to be an issue.
I agree 100%. Yeah. And it's super empowering, because when you get somebody who's in a warehouse who said, you know, actually, let me take a step back. Paul Thurrott said it best. Mm-hmm. He was not really into Power Platform. We started talking about Flow and Power Apps and this and that. And we had a long conversation before we recorded the show. And he went home that weekend and he went into SharePoint, made a list of all of the things he had in his liquor cabinet, and in less than 20 minutes, built an app where he could pick what was in there and what drinks he could make from it. So I'm like, that's awesome. That's great. He's like, but I'm an old school developer. Doing something like that would have taken a long time. He goes, I did this in not much longer than it took to make the SharePoint list. And I was blown away.
Yeah.
And when you see someone like that, who's old school, like you and I, who goes, holy cow, this opens up opportunities. And boy, did I miss out on this. And a guy like Third, who's very much in the know and mm-hmm. super smart and gets all that. You're like, all right, that's, how do we get everybody else to see that too? But it's these folks in the warehouse who go, hey, if I just build this list of the different tires and the different rims and which ones go together, and I can quickly type this and get a list and show it to a customer in my mobile app, I could be doing twice as much work. And you go, wow. But you've got to let them do that, and then go, great. How do we make sure that this, if his phone gets lost, not everybody knows how much stock we have and things like that. But you're right. That's the solving the problem for that innovation. But we're seeing that happen in spades across all platforms. Mm-hmm. And that's where, you know, these new, why Power Platform is such a huge bet for us, and why it needs to be a big bet for every IT pro and citizen developer, because it is absolutely an amazing way for with someone with low code or no code skills to be able to really do game changing applications.
Yeah. You know, and the IT folks are using Automate, right? Like, because it helps us too. There's lots of step by step tasks. Like, you think about the full onboarding process in a modern company today, there's no one product that's going to solve that for you.
Yeah,
you know, you have to poke your way into a lot of different tools. And see, I mean, you see Automate show up in that. The idea mm-hmm. that it's just not that tough to throw a GUI over top of that, even for an IT guy.
No.
You know, to make that just a little more elegant, a little more solvable. It's an interesting thought. Like, these are tools for us in IT as well.
Yes.
But I think from a governance perspective, you got to give the puppy enough leash to run themselves out to even know, you know, how long the leash should be. Like, don't lock that stuff down or it'll never get used.
It'll not only will never get used, but if you sit there and try to figure out every weakness, you're going to spend so much time trying to plug non-existent holes rather than let it go, not make sure that it's not your most important, highest level of data, but do it. Take a look at it and go, okay, you know what? I see a potential weakness here and here. I'll work with the developer. Here's what we're going to do. And then that's it. Yeah, it should be reactive. If you try to be proactive, you're going to end up making yourself crazy.
But the guy with the tire app, the fact that you can come to him after the fact, because you can see the flow of the data and say, listen, I need you to use MFA on that device.
Right.
Yeah, that's all. It. So that if you do lose it, nobody can access it. Or if they try, we'll know immediately. That's.
And on that one, we come full circle. And it's that simple. Just, hey, we're going to lock it down.
You
and
need you to lock it. I love that you want to do that.
It's going
to
look for your face.
Yeah. I need to set some limits on it. That's all. I'm not stopping you from doing it. I just want to make it safe.
And everybody's going to go, okay, if it's not going to take me more than 3 or 4 seconds to get past that stage, then I'm all for it. Yeah. It's when you make me do something and then I have to go through 2 more logins and single sign-on isn't enabled and I've got to do it every time and get a code and type that in. Forget it. I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
It's like the old, you know, Cisco VPN where you had to have the token and look at the number and wait 60 seconds. Otherwise, it would change and go back and you'd be like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm not doing that. It can't be that high a barrier.
Right.
I feel optimistic.
Good.
Yeah, because there's some good things happening here. I mean, it's been a tough year. There's no two ways about it. But
it's been an exhausting year. You and I have way more gray hair now than we had at the beginning of this year. My beard is far more salt and pepper, and yours is much longer and salt and pepper.
Yes,
that's a good look though for you.
You like that? Yeah, I'm doing the wise old guy. I was pulling on it anyway, and she hasn't made me cut it off yet.
You are a wise old guy, so that it's perfectly fitting. That's absolutely correct.
Funny. Hey. All the best in the holidays for you, friend. I hope you and yours
do
well.
Same to you and your family.
And our border is still closed at the moment. One of these days, it'll be open. We'll be able to get a coffee. But
I'm getting low on good cigars, so they need to open it up soon. My whole stash from Europe is, fading away. So I need to figure this out. It's causing me issues.
Who knew it'd be this long, huh?
Oh, God, I miss traveling. So, yes. And seeing people. And like I said, I miss hugs. I just miss seeing good friends and getting a hug.
One of my favorite things. Stephen Rose, thanks so much for coming back on the show.
Thank you, Richard. Great to see you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.